You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 416. We're going to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Miami of Ohio. Randall's here as well. Randall, how are you doing?
Great, and Notre Dame is 4-1.
They even rose in the AP poll by one whole spot.
Hey, they're moving ahead.
It will be really interesting to see. We'll get into it. I want to talk a little bit about where should Notre Dame be ranked and where do you expect them to be ranked when the college football playoff ranking, when that comes out in, I think it comes out in 2 weeks, right?
Is it next week? Isn't it usually the sixth
week? The sixth week. So after the UNC game, but I think so.
It'll probably be before
USC.
USC.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. But first off, we want to get our Main Street Roasters winner. And we had a close one.
Yeah, somebody predicted 48-17, but then Jerry B 25 predicted 49-17. So very impressive. And that was on Instagram. I think there's been some confusion. Some people think they might have got the winning score, but we combined Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So sometimes if you think you're the closest on Twitter, there might be somebody on Instagram that did have a closer score. So we do pick a winner, so we haven't forgotten about you.
So one free pound of coffee coming Jerry's way. Actually, I know who Jerry is, so it's kind of funny.
Yes, very good. We'll have to watch and see what his score predictions are for the rest of the season, see if he's always that close.
Well, let's talk a little bit about where we were right, where we were wrong. The game was a 21-point spread when we were talking about it last week, and I did not think that Notre Dame would cover, and I thought a big part of it is because I thought Miami would come out and play pretty much mistake-free and definitely turnover-free football. Well, that was not the case. Notre Dame covered the spread in a big way, and they also forced two turnovers from Miami.
I will say we had different score predictions. What was mine?
Yours was 48-10. Mine was 33-18. So I was close on Miami's, and you were close on Notre Dame's.
According to the Twitter predictions, people must have been listening to you because there was a lot of close ones. Somebody predicted 31-28. 31-24, 38-28, 27-21, 37-27, 24-21. So, actually, hang on, sorry, that's the Michigan State one. No wonder it was that much closer.
I was gonna say, I knew there was a few that were close to my prediction where it was about 18-20 points, but I didn't know that close.
I don't have it brought up right now, but. Those were the Michigan State ones. No wonder they were closer.
So
they were a little more spread out on the.
I know there were some that were closer to what my prediction had been. So. Randall, when the college football ranking, when that comes out here in a week or two, where do you think Notre Dame will be ranked? And then also, where do you think Notre Dame should be ranked? In after the North Carolina game, so one more game. And again, Notre Dame is going to blow out North Carolina. In fact, I think one sign that Notre Dame is getting a lot of respect nationally is looking at the spread for this game. I know North Carolina, they're 1-3 or 1-4, and they don't look like a good team at all. They have a ton of players that are injured, and we'll get into all of that here in a few days. But it's a 17-point spread. And this is at North Carolina. So if this would be at Notre Dame, if it'd be a home game from Notre Dame, it'd probably be closer to 22-23 point spread, which is bigger than what Miami of Ohio was. So part of it is because North Carolina is really bad. They're 1-4. But I think part of it is, too, is that at least from Vegas, Notre Dame is getting a lot of respect. So, talking about the ranking, where do you think Notre Dame should be ranked? Before we play USC, before Notre Dame plays Miami, North Carolina State, who is ranked now, and then at the end of the year, Stanford. So, there's a lot of big tests remaining on Notre Dame's schedule. But where do you think they should be ranked right now?
Well,
and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. Just
I'm not going to complain about it too much. There are still a lot of undefeated teams. There are. There's a couple. Ohio State is ahead of Notre Dame at 4-1. They're number 10, but they lost number 3, Oklahoma. Auburn, what was their one loss?
Clemson.
So Clemson, they lost the number 2 team. USC lost to
Washington State.
I'm trying to see where they're ranked right now. Oh, number 11. Oklahoma. The teams that have one loss are against highly ranked teams. Notre Dame did lose to a highly ranked team as well by 1 point. So, you know, you could argue that they should maybe be further up the rankings than they are, but I don't want to because I'd rather be playing as the underdog. I'd rather be ranked too low than be ranked, you know, top 10 and everybody saying, Notre Dame shouldn't be there. I'd rather be ranked too low. And I think, you know, Notre Dame has always been ranked high.
Okay, but this is a good exercise, though, for Notre Dame fans at home, too, who think that the odds are always stacked against Notre Dame. Before the college football ranking comes out, you know who we've played. We will have played North Carolina before the ranking comes out. We won't have, I think it comes out before USC anyway. We've got a bye week after North Carolina. So before we play some really tough, good caliber opponents in USC, North Carolina State, Miami, Stanford, Navy, for crying out loud, who's close to undefeated if they're not undefeated. But I think Notre Dame, I'm not one of those people who thinks that, everyone's out to screw Notre Dame at every chance they get. I think there's bias for sure, but I think there's bias in favor of Notre Dame as well. So I'm not one of those who thinks that, Notre Dame, if there's a way that the NCAA or the College Football Playoff Committee can screw Notre Dame out of a chance, that they're going to take it. I don't believe that. I think they want the four best teams to play, and they want the best possible matchups that there can be, which are the best four teams. That's how you get the best matchups. So I think Notre Dame will come out when the College Football Playoff ranking comes out, and they will probably be on the high end, probably 16, and on the low end, probably 18. Like I think they'll be like in the. They'll be above 15th, but definitely higher and lower. It's kind of confusing. Depends which way you look at it. But between 15 and 20, for sure.
Yeah, I could see that. But right now, I'm not going to worry about it too much. I do think Notre Dame is, for the first time in a while, they're not getting the attention that they should.
They're not getting it from even the AP, players, but like, they are getting it from Vegas. Because a 17-point spread at for an away game, even though they've lost 11, maybe 13 players, North Carolina, I think it's still a better program than Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
So Notre Dame is definitely getting love from Vegas.
Yeah, but I'm saying even with the players, just like somebody like Josh Adams, I don't think the team is getting quite the respect that they should, or they're not as hyped as they have been in the past. And I think it's just finally soaking. People just aren't as high on Notre Dame as they used to be. Before we move, I'm gonna make a correction right here and break Jerry's heart, since I was looking at the Michigan State, so I will admit I was looking at the wrong. Oh. Somebody on Twitter. Not on Instagram. Okay. That was right. On Twitter, Burpee Guy actually predicted 51-16.
Oh.
So he was one off for Notre Dame and one off for So he was within two. Jerry was within three.
Sorry, Jerry. Hopefully you listen to this whole podcast.
Sorry to break your heart, but we'll have to send the coffee to Burpee Guy. But that was my mistake. I wondered why the score was that close, but it makes a lot more sense now. But the score, I'd say overall the scores were closer this week than they have been any other week, just because, you know, the type of opponent that Notre Dame was going to play. But we should say, you know, Chuck Martin was right. The team that had the first 85 picks came out and played like a team that had the first 85 picks at recess. So,
So we continue to see this thing that we first heard from Drew Tranquil talking about coming out punishing teams, and then Brian Kelly last week leading up to this team talked about dominating the opponents. Notre Dame has done that, and they definitely have not always done that. It's been talked about, you know, over and over how Notre Dame always plays down to the opponent and then sometimes plays up to the opponent, but usually not enough to win. Well, they've dominated teams. Since that loss to Georgia, they have dominated teams.
Yeah.
Not always for four quarters like Boston College, but at the end of the day, at the end of the game, it was a dominating performance.
And even against Miami of Ohio, obviously a lesser opponent, they came out and were prepared to play, and you could see that they were playing hard. I mean, right from the start, two plays, touchdown, Josh Adams, you know, breaking tackles. They're definitely doing much better at getting ready for these games, and it's obviously paying off. And they're having fun, too. I mean, genuine fun, which it's obviously easier to enjoy the game of football if you're winning. But Brian Kelly is, you can just see it, that they're, you know, the things he does on the sideline. Brian Polian, it looked like he was going to talk to him, whisper something in his ear, and then he ended up getting, Ruben, you actually, that's what happens when you leave like 2 minutes early. Brian Polian, after that shanked punt there at the end of the game with the backup punter, it looked like Brian Kelly was going to whisper something to Polian, and he kind of hugged him and leaned over and like gave him a kiss on his side of his head. And they're just out there enjoying it. And it's good to see that. But the schedule is definitely going to get tougher. The teams that they played combined,
their win-loss record.
Win-loss is, had more losses than wins. Looking at the rest of the schedule, I think there's a combined total of 5 losses. So, maybe without North Carolina.
Probably without North Carolina.
Okay. But the schedule is definitely going to get harder. But it's playing out in Notre Dame's favor. This is how it's perfect. You're playing easier opponents, teams that are struggling, and you had that one loss, but it's at the beginning of the year.
Against a great team.
So
at least appears to be a very good team.
Yes. So the schedule is definitely playing in Notre Dame's favor this year.
All right, let's go through the different position groups and giving our thoughts. Let's start with the offense. Offensive line, again, dominating performance. You know, we wouldn't be having the success we have in the running game without them, and they've been doing a really good job. They've been giving Wimbush enough time, definitely, to get rid of the ball, especially against Miami. And there was times when he did look a little bit frantic, and we'll talk more about it when we talk about Brandon Wimbush. But the offensive line, I thought, did just a phenomenal job against, you know, it is subpar competition.
And the one guy that really stood out was Sam Mustipher. It definitely helped. He definitely wanted to make the highlight reel again this week. And both of Josh Adams' touchdown runs, he was the one that had the big block that gave Josh Adams the opportunity for the long run. So he played really good. He was called for a holding play, but it was very questionable. Some of the calls that were made were kind of a reach, and luckily it didn't matter in this game, but that was one of them on Mustipher. But just the offensive line gave Wimbush plenty of time. He had time to look downfield, and he did, you know, did have a pocket there to step up into, but we can put more of the blame on Wimbush than on the offensive line. They're playing like they need to.
And then the tight ends.
We didn't see a whole lot from them,
at least not in the passing game.
Which the passing game is struggling, and so that kind of effect, you don't notice the dirty work that the tight ends are doing.
Yeah.
But Mack did have one pass thrown at his feet. He didn't really have a chance to catch it, but he definitely didn't go down and get it either. Yeah, you just don't notice a whole lot of things that they're doing out there. They're not involved in the passing game much. They just need to keep blocking like they are. And, I think it's more on Wimbush helping them out than the tight ends themselves.
And then let's talk about wide receivers. We did see, okay, one thing that I got right, Randall got wrong, was we did see Stephenson, and there was others that were saying, I knew he was going to play after Brian Kelly's Thursday night comments.
Yeah.
It was clear that, yeah, he was going to play. Although I was surprised how early he played. It was in the first half. I think it may even have been in the first quarter.
I forget the exact timing, but yeah, he was brought in early. I hadn't expected to see him in there. I just wasn't convinced that this suspension.
It seemed.
We still don't know why.
I think we saw him for two different series. He was out there. He got the ball thrown to him in for a little wide receiver screen that had no chance of going anywhere. Bad decision by Wimbush to even throw it because it was blown up before it even got started. Then the next play, Wimbush was forced out of the pocket, looking downfield, and Stephenson. It was a broken play, and Wimbush threw it deep, hoping that Stephenson would have kept on running, and he had stopped.
Well, the first play he came in, he dropped it. I'm going to count it as a drop.
Well, fine, call it a drop. It was a blown play. Yeah, it was a blown play. Could have been picked off for six, probably.
But it was interesting that Wimbush targeted him two times in a row. Like, as soon as he came in, he targeted him twice, and neither one worked out. So I don't know if he was just trying to get – it was kind of weird that they would, like, try that, but –
I know. I figured he would come in and not get targeted.
Yeah.
Or at least not get targeted right away.
Yeah.
He did pick up a catch then later on in the game, and it netted negative 3 yards.
Yeah. One catch for negative 3 yards. So quite the... he had tweeted out before the game. What did he say? I'm back. Well,
hey, it takes a little bit to get back in the flow of things. I still think that he could end up...
What I don't understand is, okay... why wasn't he practicing?
What do you mean? He was practicing, just not with...
Yeah, but he had no effort
with the first team.
I know, but...
Oh, you're saying when we saw him.
Yeah. He was putting no effort into it.
Well, what about Claypool? Claypool also was kind of haphazardly in the one open practice that we saw, the new and gold game.
But he definitely didn't seem that excited to be practicing. He's definitely not a guy... If he knows he's not going to play, he's not going to practice.
Well... I still think that with the talent he has, he could end up being the second leading receiver. There haven't even been that rattle. It wouldn't be that hard to do it. If he has two good games, if he has a couple long catches, I mean, he'll be as far as yards go, he'll be the second leading receiver.
Oh, he could. I agree, but he's not going to be. I still don't think he will.
I don't think he will either. But I think it's.
Oh, he has a chance.
I think there's a decent chance it could happen.
Well,
I don't think it's better than 50.
Nobody has a lot of yards, so
I know.
Right now everybody has a chance.
I don't think it's better than 50%, but I think it's closer to 50 than it is to 10%.
Okay. CJ Sanders, everybody keeps wondering why we don't see more of him, but then he dropped pass at the end of the game, and that's kind of the reason. Right there's a sign. That's why he's not playing. That's why he's not getting more reps. To me, it seems like as... close as all these wide receiver, I guess you call it a rape, whatever, fighting for these positions, as close it is, you have to catch every ball.
But I agree with you that clearly they're not stepping up. But then even Chase Claypool did struggle early in the year, and he has been more consistent after playing some more. And same thing with Alize Mack, too. Really struggled the first 2 weeks and hasn't, I don't know if he's dropped a pass the last. I mean, the one that was turning his feet, he probably could have dove for that. But
I think Alize Mack is more. His issue is trying to make big plays, trying to make this huge comeback. He's kind of the opposite of Kevin Stephenson. I think Alize Mack was so.
You think Alize puts too much effort, and Stephenson puts too little.
No, he's all about. He's trying too hard to be that number one guy, make the impressive catch. You know, follow him on Twitter. Just his tweets for the last year.
TikTok.
You know, he's tweeting set one-handed catches. You know, just stuff like that. Like, he wants to be the star. He wants to be the show.
Well, he's played well the last couple of weeks.
Oh, I agree. Mean,
maybe not great, but he's played well.
But his issue is just trying to do too much. He can do it. He's just trying to do too much.
Yeah.
But we did see quite a few players in this game, or wide receivers.
Yeah, Boykin had one catch, 54 yards, and a touchdown. And then Fink, probably, he had the nicest catch of the year, I think. 48 yards.
Was that because the pass was from Ian Book?
Well, I do want to talk about that. But yeah,
it was in stride. He caught it. I mean, he caught the back of the ball. Like, it wasn't even like it was right in his hands. I mean, he had to stretch and didn't. He was behind the ball.
And he did drop one earlier, though, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. That didn't show up on the stat sheet here, but he did drop one earlier. So there clearly is room for these receivers to step up. It continues to not all be on Wimbush, but also not all on the wide receivers. They both have room to step up and help each other out.
And Miles Boykin had a very impressive, his was a long catch as well, and he kind of broke that tackle. I mean, he was falling over into the end zone, but he did make it. EQ had some impressive catches. EQ and Claypool did a great job making the hard catches in this game.
Claypool had a beautiful catch for the touchdown.
Yeah. So they're definitely your number one and two guy. They kind of, if there's any question before this week, it showed their, you know, where they're at mentally. They're the guy, you know, staying in bounds. Obviously Michael Young, you know, had one, he was ruled out of bounds then, but EQ or Claypool would probably stayed in bounds to make that kid. I mean, just kind of shows the, you know, they've been in the system program a couple years and have a little more experience. That's where the experience shows. Cam Smith did not record a catch, but that first pass or the first play of the game was to him and was overthrown. It seems like it happened again later. He was targeted again and didn't make the catch. It seems like the throws to him are off. So he hasn't, I think he's been playing he's been playing good, but he hasn't been able to, he's had bad passes to him. So,
but
Brian Kelly mentioned that, you know, that his position is still kind of the one that they're questioning, that they're looking at.
The one thing that is still missing in the past, or there's lots of things, but one thing that is clearly still missing is someone to take the top off the defense. EQ's not that guy. Chase isn't that guy. Even Fink, you could see he wasn't outrunning the Miami DBs. I mean, he wasn't going to create a lot of separation there, no matter how much further he was going to keep on running. He wasn't going to create a lot of separation. And that's where Stefferson is a guy that can create separation down the field.
Well, I think Cam Smith can. I think Cam Smith and Kevin Stefferson are the guys that can do that. But
I just didn't think, maybe. I know Brian Kelly said, Cam is one of the fastest guys on the team, or right? Didn't he say that coming in?
He is quick, and even before his injury, he was very fast before his injury, but he just hasn't had a chance. The throws to him are not good, and so he hasn't been able to take advantage. It seems the throws are always off. And
well, since we're talking about throws, let's talk about the quarterbacks, and then we'll talk about the running backs.
Yeah,
Brandon Wimbush, 7 of 18, 119 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, I believe he started out 1 for 7 passes, and then finished the entire game 7 of 18. So it did. It was a tough going there for a little bit, but it did get a little bit better as the game went on. And there's still, there's clearly still issues there. But the only thing that I'm disappointed in is that I'm not sure he's going to be good enough for Notre Dame to win he's not going to be good enough for Notre Dame to win the rest of the games. And whereas I think the rest of the team is good enough, and I think Wimbush will get there. I just don't think it'll happen until next year.
I'm not quite as worried as you, because I think it's just a matter of trusting the receivers.
Well, that's where I was at, and I'm just not sure it's going to happen fast enough to win out.
Well, he can make the throw. The problem is he's waiting too long. He doesn't trust the receivers to get to a certain spot. All he has to do is release the pass. It's not a matter of all this. He's just got to have enough confidence to release that pass. That's all it takes.
And I did like that they were, I mean, clearly they were running a practice.
Yeah.
They were practicing the
passing
game.
They were obviously throwing a lot more because they were, and Brian Kelly mentioned, they saw a lot more of they got to a lot more of the playbook than what they had in the weeks before. I think he actually gave a percentage of what they had done, but they were definitely practicing the passing game. especially second and third quarter, after that lead in the first quarter, they were getting Wimbush to throw just to try to get him comfortable. And he is kind of all over, but he's got to trust everybody, the whole team. I think he's scared of getting hit. And then even that one pass that was a lateral that would have been a loss, they got it because was it roughing the passer then? And so they got 15 yards, and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But right after that, he did not look good. I mean, he had some very bad throws right after that. For him, it's a mental thing.
And I do agree with you. I think he'll end up being a very good quarterback. I guess I'm just wondering, as far as the time frame, is it going to happen in 2017?
See, yes, I think it can, because he did make some throws. That one drive when he target when I was it EQ got three receptions in the one drive when he started hitting EQ. He actually looked good, and he actually stepped up into the pocket and made the throws. And so there was a glimpse of what he can do. He just got to have – usually you see him take off. He doesn't step up into the pocket. We've seen it other times. If nothing's there, he doesn't step up in the pocket and wait for
– Well, the commentators talked about how a couple times his eyes were just like bouncing back and forth, and he was moving laterally too. – And they were saying that, you know, that's just a sign that he's not seeing things. His eyes are going back and forth so much that he's not seeing clearly.
Well, I believe
what's
it was
happening.
In the post game show they were talking about how he wants to see the open guy. He doesn't trust the team. He doesn't trust the team enough to make that throw. He's waiting for the receiver to actually be open, and then it's too late. Instead of throwing the ball and letting the receiver get there. So, and that's maybe why he's bouncing around, because he doesn't see anybody open when he should make that throw. Like, he should be able in front of the receiver to see and throw it to a spot versus throwing to an open receiver. And he's not doing that. And who knows? There's different things. I mean, you can even see Brian Kelly on the sideline telling him to turn his shoulders on the one throw. I mean, so there's mechanics. So some of those things he's too... Which Wimbush talked about, he's too rattled. He's thinking about too much other stuff to even think about his mechanics, and so some of it is off.
It's still, everything is still just going too fast for him. So, begs the question, Ian Book. Do you think Ian Book gives Notre Dame, and I'm glad you're chuckling, because I'm sure a lot of fans are saying, man, that Ian Book kid, he looked pretty good. He threw that beautiful ball to Fink. He was 3 of 5. He did have success on the ground, ran it for... 37 yards, had a long of 26. And honestly, I've probably expected too little from Ian Book. I think he probably would be... I think at this point, I'd be comfortable with him as a backup now. And I have not been high on him at all.
Oh, but I'd be comfortable with him. I think you can kind of look at Ian Book as maybe the Sean Crawford. How I look at Sean Crawford. Sean Crawford has to be so... The reason he's on Notre Dame's team is because he is so good at what he does. He has to overcome his size. The only way he's out there is because of his mental and his making plays. He can't lean. He has to make up for his size, and so he's very intense. So I think that's what Ian Book's kind of the same way. He's not going to be as flashy. You know, he doesn't have the upside that Wimbush does. But what he does, he has to be good at it, and that's why he's at Notre Dame. That's why he has a scholarship at Notre Dame. And so that's why he looked good. Wimbush is going to make bigger plays, flashier. You know, he can maybe run further, pass, you know, different things. But Ian Book is good at what he does. And so, I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
in some ways, he's kind of
rely on his size and strength.
I mean, kind of like Tommy Rees in some ways.
Yeah.
So, but what do you say to the people, Randall, that are saying, man, we should give Ian Book, we should give him a chance, I think?
Nobody should be saying that.
Okay, thank you.
That's my answer. It's not even a conversation, because nobody should be saying that.
Yes, thank you.
But he's good. You could feel comfortable having him come in and finish out a game. I mean, Notre Dame has a good team around him. He can throw, he can run. His running is a lot better than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
And he makes nice passes. So,
all right. Talking about, I guess we should mention this too. Both Wimbush and Book did have a better quarterback rating than Gus Raglin. Wimbush had 149.4. Book had 145.7, and Ragland had a 123.3.
We should also mention Montgomery Van Gorder actually got to go into the game and play quarterback, which I was glad he got to do that. I wish they would have let him throw the ball just to get a pass out there. But there was actually a lot of guys, walk-ons, backups that would never see the field that were out there. And it was good to see that happen. I mean, it's probably the only time they'll ever be out there on the field. But there was 7 walk-ons that got to be out, that played out there. And you could, re-watching the game, which one was it? One of the defensive linemen. He's massive, but in all the wrong ways. I mean,
he has great size, but in all the wrong places.
It was just, he was a walk-on, but it was good.
Randall, are you saying he was fat?
Well, I'll have to you have to see. He wasn't necessarily fat, but just the he wasn't a Division I, a Notre Dame defensive lineman, or like a scholarship.
Yeah,
you can tell. But I'm glad these guys got to be out there and had a chance to be on the field. So it was their Rudy moment.
Let's talk about the running backs. Josh Adams only ran the ball 8 times, but he amassed 159 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's a 19.9 average. He did get a little bit dinged up, and although Brian Kelly said he would have been good to go if they would have needed him in the second half, he did not play, and clearly that was the right thing to do. I hope that he can be him and Dexter and Tony Jones Jr., all three of those guys are completely healthy for USC here in a few weeks. And they should be.
According to Brian Kelly, they should all be ready to go except
Dexter.
I thought Dexter would be. But they'll be ready to go next week. Tony Jones obviously had that hit, but he was fine. They say he didn't have a concussion, could have gone through that and could have gone back into the game, but there was no reason to. They were getting a little thin. You know, we did see some tweets about who's the next guy, because they were down to McIntosh. So somebody suggested C.J. Sanders in their running back, or I would have said it would probably have been a walk-on.
Yeah.
But Josh Adams, it's crazy what he's doing. Like, I expect him to have a good year, but not this good. Well, here's some of his stats. He is averaging 9.01 yards per run, which is third in the nation.
Those other two backs that have a higher average per carry, how many carries do they have?
Well,
or are you going to get to that?
Don't take away
okay.
the...
Okay.
But he has 658 total yards, which is fourth in the country, 131.6 yards per game, which is seventh. And he's done all this while sitting out 6 quarters in 5 games. So I don't know what the other carries are, what the other players are doing that are ahead of him, but I'm pretty sure they played more than he did.
Well, I'm pretty sure those higher average per carry, those guys, there's no way they have, I don't even know, how many carries does Josh Adams, does he have on the year?
70-some, I believe. I think it's like 73.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Incredible season that Josh Adams is having, which is why I was saying he's the number one back this whole fall.
But he's breaking tackles, which as soon as I saw the second play of the game, when he broke those couple tackles, you could tell right away that Notre Dame, that was the sign that Notre Dame was physically more talented than Miami. But he's been doing it to other teams. I mean, he's just running through guys. You know, Saquon Barkley from Penn State jumping over guys and doing all that. Basically, the only difference between those two is Barkley's receiving yards. I believe he has like 300 some receiving yards.
And Josh, he could have caught a pass,
but
for a little chunk.
Okay, here you go. Josh Adams has through 5 games. Josh Adams has 658 yards. Barkley has 574. They both have 4 rushing touchdowns. And then Barkley has 386 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns. Josh Adams only has 69. He should have had another 30-some.
Yeah, he should have
in this game. He should have caught that pass. But that's the one thing that kind of sets him apart. But you hear all the noise about Saquon Barkley, and Josh Adams is right there. Has 100 more rushing yards than he does in six. I think Barkley, I'm pretty sure Barkley's played more than he has. So anyways.
Well, if he's ready to go on Saturday, he should have another good rushing game. But again, I just hope that because we need Josh Adams 100% healthy against USC.
And the teams, looking at the stats of the teams that Notre Dame has played, they've been playing some good rush defense. So it's not, this isn't something that is happening because they're playing teams with no rush defense. And look at it like that. Notre Dame has no passing offense right now, so they can bring everybody in to try to stop, and they still can't do it. Somebody tweeted out that Michigan State, I think, is 16th in the country with against the run. If you take away Notre Dame's yards for that game, they'd be first, which obviously they would have gained some yards. You're just going to. But even Georgia, I mean, Notre Dame didn't run much against them, but they're holding everybody to almost nothing. I mean, Tennessee hardly had any rushing yards against Georgia this week. So Notre Dame has been able to do it against good teams. So one thing I thought was interesting with McIntosh, the announcers mentioned during the game, is, you know, he played receiver a lot, or he was practicing at receiver. But Brian Kelly had told him that he was good on the deep throws, but wasn't very good at all on the short and intermediate throws. So I thought that was kind of interesting that he was good on the deep throws.
Because we need some deep threats?
No, just you would think it'd be the other way around. It'd be easier to catch the short passes. But
well, maybe his route running isn't that good.
Yeah.
Anyway. He did. McIntosh did have the most carries. Again, 12 carries, 47 yards, one touchdown, a long of 26 yards, and a 3.9 average. And you can definitely see he's clearly a different kind of back than what you have in Josh Adams and Tony Jones Jr. He's a much smaller back, but we need him, and he's been producing. I don't think he'll ever be the kind of back that can...
He's 5'10", 193.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever be the bell cow. Is that what Brian Kelly referred to Josh Adams as?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think he'll be a primary back, but he's definitely a nice compliment, and when he's called upon, he's been playing well enough, and I think he's been playing hard.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I think he'll be a great backup next year to Dexter and
Tony.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move over then to the defensive side of the ball.
I'll just throw out some stats for Notre Dame ranks offense and defense.
Okay.
Notre Dame is still 100% in the red zone offense, which is first in the country. And then rushing offense, they're 7th with 301.4 yards. Scoring, they're 14th with 41.4. Definitely higher than what I expected it to be. Yards per carry is 3rd with 7.1. And then some stats on the defense. Their fumble recovery is 7th in the nation. 4th down defense is 14th. Turnovers forced. It's 14th. They have 11 turnovers, and 10 of those have been touchdowns. And so that means Notre Dame, on turnovers, Notre Dame has outscored other teams 70-3. They've turned 10 turnovers into 70 points versus 3 for the opposing team. And the turnover margin, they're 15th in the country. So, yeah, much improved. There's not much to say. It's obvious.
All right, talking about defense, defensive line.
They keep playing better than I expect them to.
Tillery had a quarter or forced a fumble, had a sack. Actually had a sack and a half.
I think he was also credited with some quarterback pressure. Quarterback hurry. He had one quarterback hurry. So. But yeah, he is definitely a guy that has stepped up his game. And we say it every week, but he continues to do it. He hasn't slacked off yet.
It looked like Dalen Hayes primarily came in on third downs, and we saw more of Trimbetti on first and second down.
That's kind of what I thought, but rewatching the game, that's how it started out. But then rewatching the game, he was in there more than that.
Was it? Okay.
But he on third downs, he's almost always in there. Third down, they usually have Okora and Hayes.
And Dalen Hayes.
Dalen Hayes.
Okay, linebackers.
Well, just Khalid, which actually, post-game show, they talked with... I thought I had it. They changed his name. He supposedly pronounces it different.
Khalid.
Khalid.
Oh, he pronounces Khalid.
Yes.
I
think that's
around.
How it is. I think that's how it is. We all say Khalid Kareem, and it's actually Khal...
Anyway.
I was trying to say it over and over today. I'm even more confused now. I can't remember which way it was. But anyways.
Kareem.
He got his first sack, and he's played more. Brian Kelly mentioned him in his press conference and said that he's physically getting better as well. Like, he just keeps getting better and better, and physically he's coming into his own is what Brian Kelly said. And he had a sack, and he had pressure on the one. It wasn't a fumble then, but it was a potential fumble. But he has improved, and the defensive line just continues to perform better than expected. Tillery's roughing the passer call was... I don't think that should have been roughing the passer, just like the one against, Georgia out of bounds. But anyways, I guess it's okay in a game that doesn't matter, but they should get it figured out.
Linebackers again led the team with tackles. Miles Morgan and Drew Tranquil each had 7. Martini had 5, and then Coney had 4.
Greer Martini, well, he got burned on one of the first plays. The pass was just over him, and the receiver caught it. But then the second time it happened, he had an incredible interception, tipped it, and caught it.
And an incredible return.
Well, yeah.
Talk about it, the vision, I mean, which there was blocking involved too, but the vision that he was able to use to return that, I mean, it was incredible.
And he talked about after the game about how they practiced that play. And what I think is interesting with this defense, he kind of talked about a little bit, how they're more prepared for each opponent. Like, Elko has them prepared for the opponent that they're playing. So just like that, they knew that was something Miami would do, and they practiced the play, and it worked out.
Well, same thing with, remember, Julian Love against Michigan yes. State, he said the same thing. They worked over this play.
So they knew that pass was coming. Those passes are coming.
So they've been doing great in scouting the opponents, but then Brian Kelly also talked about self-scouting.
Yeah.
And how they used to do it every, I think he said 5 weeks, or maybe it was twice a year. But now they're doing it every week and trying to eliminate any tendencies they have as far as running right versus left or moving their tight ends around or their running backs around. There's a lot of things that I think has changed with this team. And in and of themselves on their own, they're small. But as a whole, it just makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And another difference is that Brian Kelly changed the locker room setup.
Oh, yeah.
Where they used to be more set up by position groups. Now they're mixed in. And Brian Kelly said they set up the groups by personalities.
And he did it with Sam Bush, which is one of the walk-ons. So it was kind of interesting that he picked him to help him decide that. But they're definitely preparing the players more, and it's showing on defense when they're getting the interceptions they're getting are because they've practiced that. They knew it was coming. I was complaining a little bit when the game first started and Miami was converting all these short passes. We all knew that's what Miami was going to do. That's what they do, the short intermediate passes. And so it seemed like even throughout the game, the cornerbacks, which I guess we can talk about more of the cornerback, but they didn't pressure like I thought they should have. I mean, everybody knew that Miami wanted those short passes, and they were getting them. You know, Martini did get that interception then. So I don't know why. That's always just how they play. They should have seen that scouting, but they still wanted to play like that.
Well, but it worked out. And one thing, if you do, it's tough to march on the field especially if you're going to go 10 plays, or even if you go 7 or 8 plays, the more plays there are, the better chance there is for Notre Dame to force a turnover.
Yeah.
And the more plays there are, the more third downs there are, so there's a better chance of getting them in a third and long.
That's true. I think that's why that's a sign of this being more of a bend but don't break type, or bend and force the turnover, more like it.
And they still only scored 17 points, which it does seem kind of weird that regardless of the opponent's offensive offensive ability, they do seem to score in the upper teens. But again, Notre Dame did hold them to under 20 or fewer points. So
yeah.
And they didn't give up any touchdowns in junk time either.
Yeah, I expect. I mean, there was a lot of backups out there, and so I expect them to give up another score there at the end of the game. And I thought maybe this would be the first team to score more than 20 points against Notre Dame, but they didn't let that happen. The one thing with the linebackers, the one drive where Miami put together a good drive, it seemed like the linebackers struggled on that drive. And it's happened before.
As far as missed tackles?
Yeah. And just, you know, wrong place, wrong time. And it seems like even in other games, the linebackers have been playing good, but then they had this series.
Yes.
And when the opposing team is moving down the field, it's usually because the linebackers aren't playing good that series.
And usually it's because of missed tackles.
Yeah.
You're right. There's been series, and it's going to be probably impossible to ever play a game where there isn't a couple plays in a series where there's not missed tackles.
I agree, but when something is going wrong, it seems like the opposing offense is moving, it's the linebackers are playing bad at that point in time, yeah. That point of the game. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. I will be paying a little more attention to that just to see if that's more of a trend, but I just thought about it again rewatching the game that was a series that the linebackers struggled a little bit.
And again, Notre Dame did not give up a rushing touchdown. Both touchdowns were through the air.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, more about the cornerbacks.
Both of those touchdowns through the air were against Nick Watkins. He struggled a little bit in this game.
He did. This was, in my opinion, this was probably his worst game.
Yeah.
And not because he was out of position, but he just didn't get his head turned around often enough. And then he saw Julian Love knock a ball down in the end zone. Because he did get his head turned, or even if he didn't see the ball, he knew the ball was coming just from the way the receiver was playing and was able to get a hand on it.
I think some of it was Nick Watkins was going up against James Gardner, who's 6'4", 216 pounds. So he was probably thinking about it too much, maybe making sure that he was on the guy. And it seemed like if he had just turned around, he could have made it a play on the ball, but I think going up against the big receiver like that, he did struggle a little bit. I mean, the receiver was playing good, and their quarterback is a good quarterback. Gus Raglin is a good quarterback. So, you know, it was his, at least he got his bad game out of the way, I guess you could say. Yeah, he got beat on both touchdowns. He had a pass interference call. He did struggle some.
Crawford ended up with half a sack, and then ready to move on to safeties.
Troy Pride's hit when he came in at the end of the game. He hit the defender. Was it a receiver? I think it was a receiver,
I was
he's
a little
still
bit
feeling
worried.
That today.
I was a little worried that he was going to pick up a taunting.
Oh, because he was kind of standing there.
Yeah.
But yeah, he took him out. Pretty impressive hit from Troy Pride. But I thought Love, yeah, you mentioned Love breaking up that pass. He played very well. So at least it seems like at least one of the cornerbacks is playing good every week. So yeah, you can't complain too much. Watkins struggled, but he can learn from this game and move on from that.
And then for the safeties, Coleman finished with 3 total tackles, and we didn't see a whole lot of studs still. Brian Kelly,
I
don't think he played. Brian Kelly said that they needed him to be 100% for North Carolina. Brian Kelly said they need 4 safeties for that game. They expect a lot of plays against North Carolina.
Yeah, he said he was at 80% for Saturday with a foot injury, but he'll be 100% ready to go this week against North Carolina. Jordan Genmark Heath was out there and played, got one tackle.
Fertitta was out there. He had recorded a couple tackles as well. Or maybe those were on special teams, but he was. I thought I remember seeing him on.
Yeah, he was out there too. He had two tackles.
But were those in special teams or were those?
I'm not sure.
All right. You want to talk about special teams?
Yeah.
I don't think Notre Dame should have gone for that fake. I mean, because there was no. They should just have saved it.
True, but at the same time, everybody's going to be careful. I mean, it's going to be watching for it.
Well, I know, but so I don't want them to be watching for it.
Well, maybe they'll back. Maybe they did it so that the kicking team will back away from Chris Fink and maybe give him a little more room to run.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It worked. It'd be nice to do that against
how
USC.
Many, do you remember how many yards were gained on that?
32 yards to Tony Jones. I would like to see that against USC.
Yeah.
So, hey, but maybe they'll try it again. Now they feel confident they can do it.
Well, they created almost like the Dead Sea, the walls. It just opened up.
Yeah. Cole Kmet had a huge tackle on. It almost looked like it was going to be like a clothesline tackle, stuck out his arm and just wiped out the guy. Even there, just like the Troy Pride hit, I was a little worried they were going to call something just because it was such a vicious hit. And he also, didn't he return the first kickoff? It was kicked to him. The opening kickoff was kicked.
Was it the first one?
It
was, yeah, one of them.
Yeah. So he got a chance to return a kick.
And he probably should have stepped forward and blocked and let CJ Sanders pick it up.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So what about the field goals? It's still September, so I guess Justin Yoon's missed field goal.
Well, that was his last chance to miss.
From now on, he's gonna make all of the rest of the season. He's good to go. He's missed one outside of September, I believe.
Well, yeah, I never looked at that number, but tell you what, if he doesn't miss any more field goals throughout the regular season, forget the postseason.
Hey, you're talking about the postseason.
Well, bowl game or yeah.
Okay.
I will buy you a steak dinner.
I see.
At the steakhouse of my choosing.
Matt Freeman might want to get in on this.
No, I think I do feel a lot better than I did in the opening week, no question. After Yoon hit those field goals versus Georgia, I felt a lot more confident in his confidence in himself.
Yeah. I think he's getting it figured out.
Kickoff still seems to be a little bit weird, and I mean Doer kicked off a few times, or
he kicked in the end zone. Then Justin Yoon did too. They both have short kickoffs. It wasn't just Doer that had the short kickoffs. Yoon did it as well. So that's a little bit of a concern when you go up against a good kick return. Somebody could potentially return one of those, and that something like that can change the momentum of a game.
Oh, yeah.
Just mentally for the players, even. So I hate when that happens. So they got to, I don't know what they can do. Feed them more steak, more Wheaties, something.
Well, so far, Notre Dame has been very fortunate. When the offense turns the ball over, the defense has stepped up. And when the defense forces a turnover, the offense often ends up scoring. We haven't had that happen a whole lot the other way, almost not at all. But that definitely is more likely to happen against USC, and so we've had a lot of the momentum in game changing plays, but against USC, it'll be different if a play doesn't go Notre Dame's way like that. A momentum swinging play goes the other way.
Yeah. The bad punt at the end of the game was Jeff Riney, a walk on. So that was not, in case you were wondering, that was not Tyler Newsome. But that was the point when Brian Kelly went over and was talking with Polian. So they were, yeah. I think it was just, at that point, they were just letting guys get out on the field. It was funny to watch Polian after that fake punt. he was marching up and down the sideline. It was hilarious to see him march up and down like he was owning it there on the sideline. So he felt pretty good about that.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends about it. And go ahead.
I just want to throw this out. Jamie and Franklin, Notre Dame commit. His dad was actually diagnosed with cancer. Let me see the tweet. I guess he's in pretty bad. Oh, he tweeted out and said, "For those of you all who don't know yet, my dad's been diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, severe cancer of the blood." So it sounds pretty major. So think about it. Say a prayer for Jamie and Franklin's dad. Yeah, sad situation there.
We do have an article over on the website from Solon, and it's three takeaways from Notre Dame's victory over Miami of Ohio. So give that a read and head over to the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. It's free to sign up. We did have a few more signups over the weekend, and I started a thread, a game day thread, and we'll probably do that.
That was a good idea.
Yeah, we weren't heavily active in it, but we'll probably do it more and use it more frequently in the upcoming games. So again, that's forums.irishsportstalk.net.
And one more thing, when you're trying to, if you're bored and want to look up something online, look up safety recruit Litchfield Ajavon, I believe. He was at the game this weekend. He's a 2019 recruit. Just look it up and look at his picture. The guy looks like he's 30, and he's a junior in high school.
Randall, when you sent that picture, it reminded me, wasn't there a Canadian basketball player where they didn't know exactly what his age was?
Oh, yes.
He ended up being 30, and they thought he was a high school kid.
I forget how that was. Yeah. This could be an instance that my theory is, if watch his recruiting, if he'd end up committing to like Alabama, I guarantee you they'd paid the school to hold him back for like a couple years so that he's... You know, some of those, there is some kids, you know, they start later when they start school.
Oh, well, maybe Jimmy Clausen did.
Yes, that's true. He was an example of that. So that when they're older when they come out of high school. But he seriously looks like he's 30.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm trying to figure out how this kid is a junior in high school. So anyways, that's all I got.
All right, thank you guys for listening. And until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.